As we have covered in recent episodes, people are seemingly killing one another for reasons that are frankly stupider and stupider. Murder has become an answer to struggles, strife, and issues that many people face daily within their lives. This week we're going to look at a case where two young men, Dominic Russo, who was 20, and his friend, Davion Flanagan, who was 19, lost their lives in a car crash that the courts deemed to not only be planned and carried out on purpose, but even foretold prior to the event happening by the driver, 17-year-old Mackenzie Shirilla. Hello, my name is Lance, and welcome to episode 131 of Gone But Never Forgotten. A car crash to end a relationship, the deaths of Dominic Russo and Davion Flanagan. Hot off the heels of two of the recent episodes, the murder of Brianna Jai and the murder of Skylar Neese, it appears that the internet is doing its job and sending me information daily about similar cases. And so, that's why I wound up choosing to cover the murders of Dominic Russo and Davion Flanagan this week. This is another one of those cases that has left me shaking my head and left me sorrowful for the world that we're bringing our children in, regardless of how you feel about this case. There's little doubt that there is perhaps more hatred, more division, and more mental health struggles around us, and seemingly more ways that our younger generations feel that they're likely to get away with crime. Through these three similar episodes, we've covered friends killing friends out of hatred, jealousy, transphobia, sadism, and even just the desire to end a friendship. This week's case centers in on Mackenzie Shirilla, who the courts found purposely killed her boyfriend to end their toxic relationship, and in the process also killed a second innocent person. Mackenzie Shirilla was a 17-year-old girl just 2 days prior to her 18th birthday when this story takes place. Mackenzie's parents are Natalie Shirilla and John Shirilla. As we will discuss a little bit later in this episode, Mackenzie really is not remembered all that fondly by most of the people that went to school with her and had the, shall we say, privilege of knowing her. Many reports have surfaced since this awful story took place that have painted a picture of a young girl who seemed to believe that she was better than almost everyone. A girl who was a bully, and a girl who seemed to live with very little regard for anyone else aside from herself and serving her own wants and needs. Friends said that Mackenzie lived without boundaries, and her own parents had never placed any boundaries upon her either. Mackenzie was known as a wild child, and she truly believed that she was going to become famous based on her social media status one day. Mackenzie had been in a long-time relationship with her boyfriend at the time of this story, Dominic Russo, and it has also been said by nearly everyone, except for Mackenzie's parents, that the relationship was at best strained and at worst incredibly toxic. The two had been dating and breaking up with one another for 3 to 4 years, and Mackenzie had spent the majority of their relationship living with Dominic and his parents. Dominic's family testified in court that the pair fought often, and that the fights were not simply your casual relationship arguments, but that threats were often made towards Dominic by Mackenzie. Dominic's brother would even testify that the couple broke up often, and that he witnessed a lot of negative behavior on Mackenzie's part towards Dominic, to the extent that he was very distant from Mackenzie because he could not respect her and did not like her because of the way that she treated his brother. He said that Mackenzie did not treat his brother with respect at all most of the time. Dominic's older sister also testified and said that she did not see the negative behavior firsthand on account of the fact that she was much older and did not live at home, but that she had heard many reports from Dominic's friends that Mackenzie was incredibly toxic to others, including her brother. There was very little denying the fact, though, that Mackenzie and Dominic were involved in an abusive relationship to one degree or another. I feel that I sadly have some perspective on this type of situation. I think that I've covered briefly in previous episodes, but I have experienced being involved in an abusive relationship, much as this one appears to have been. I was the boyfriend to a girlfriend who was abusive physically, emotionally, and mentally. And the sad reality is that most people don't see the abuse that goes on, and we do live in a society where abused parties do not often speak up about abuse. And in my opinion, based on personal experience only, it is harder for a male being abused by a female to own up, speak up, and ask for help. As I researched this case, I couldn't help but to feel for Dominic on a very personal level, because I know what it's like to live that life. It sounds to me like he worked up the courage on a few occasions to try to leave the relationship behind, but that he was drawn back in because the reality was that he did care for and love Mackenzie very deeply. Oftentimes, the cycle of abuse is what entraps us when we're trapped in a relationship like this one. It's very easy to remember how someone behaves in the moment, and it can be very difficult to focus on those moments when those moments pass. The other problem is that the abuse comes with a level of shame, and because of that, oftentimes people on the outside of that relationship don't ever see the abuse. I believe that is why Dominic's family, who the couple lived with, saw the abuse, and as we will talk about later, others perhaps did not. Dominic was described by his family as someone who was a go-getter, and someone who was driven to succeed in every area of his life. His parents are Christine and Frank Russo, and he was a brother to Angelo, Christopher, Christine, Nicole, Michael, and Frank. Dominic was known by his friends to be someone who could always be counted on to be real and to be honest, and he was someone who loved most everyone that he came into contact with. It was said that he was polite and loving with everyone within his life. Teachers even said that Dominic was always trying to make every day more fun and for everyone around him in the class. He was always trying to boost morale and simply trying to make people feel better about themselves and the world around them. Dominic was very interested in music, and he was looking into joining the military. It was also said that regardless of how toxic things were between he and Mackenzie, he did indeed love her deeply, and he would do anything for her. They had a relationship where he would move heaven and earth in order to give Mackenzie whatever she wanted or needed. On the night and wee hours of the morning of July 30th and July 31st of 2022, the abuse in the relationship appears to have reached an all-time awful level. Dominic and Mackenzie were out at a party on the night of July 30th. It was certainly that time of year. Kids were having graduation parties and enjoying their summer vacation. At the end of the party, the two would get into Mackenzie's car, and they would have a third person with them, Davion Flanagan. The plan from the outset for Mackenzie, Dominic, and Davion was to spend the night after the party, and it seems that they did. They woke up around 5 a.m. and then decided to leave the party, with the plan being for Mackenzie to drive the boys home. Davion was in the back seat of the car, Dominic was in the passenger seat, and Mackenzie was driving. The vehicle, after investigation, a Toyota Camry, was first picked up by security cameras observing traffic laws at an intersection. Mackenzie slows down to make a turn. She puts her blinker on to turn right, and everything appears to be fine. This footage that is easily found online is literally a minute before the accident. Multiple security cameras would then pick up and follow the car as it accelerated at an incredible pace, reaching a speed of 100 miles per hour, or 160 kilometers per hour. And then, at approximately 5:35 a.m., the car would plow at that rate of speed into a brick wall of a commercial building and literally be destroyed upon impact. The accident took place at that time on a Sunday morning, so the area was not busy at all, and it would actually be 45 minutes before a passerby came upon the scene and called 911. The call to 911 was a man, and he let dispatch know that there was a car that had smashed up against a building. He said that the car had taken out a sign and continued on to the building, and he said that the car was smashed. First responders would rush to the scene, and they would describe it as a truly horrific scene, and many would say that it was the worst that they had ever been to. The first responders immediately noticed that there was still an occupant inside of the vehicle, and they called for paramedics. They then set to work to gaining access to the car by smashing out one of the windows. The body cam footage is very hard to watch. As the officer attempts to get through the window to gain access to Mackenzie, who at that point is the only known occupant in the vehicle, he lets others know that this is not a fresh accident and that it took place quite some time ago. The officer makes his way around the car, which, as you can imagine, is obstructed by debris and deployed airbags, looking for another way to get into the vehicle to see if he could help Mackenzie. As he makes his way around, he sees Dominic and radios that there are at least two occupants inside of the vehicle and that nobody inside of the vehicle is moving. He then manages to move some of the airbag in the back seat, and that is when he realizes that there are actually three people inside of the vehicle. He says that nobody inside of the vehicle is conscious, nor do they appear to be breathing. It is then discovered that Mackenzie is breathing, but unconscious. Mackenzie was trapped under the dashboard, and the officers note that they are going to need full extraction on all three occupants. The jaws of life were first used to remove Mackenzie from the vehicle, and she can be heard screaming as she is taken from the vehicle. She had a broken leg, several broken ribs, and she was life-flighted to the hospital. Dominic and Davion were found on top of one another. Neither one of them had been wearing a seatbelt. They were laying across from the front passenger side of the car to the back driver's seat of the car, and both of them were pronounced dead at the scene. Scott, Davion's father, said that he received a call right around lunchtime from the police, and he was told that there had been a terrible accident and that their son had not made it. At this point, the accident was being treated exactly like that, an accident. The officer that was put in charge of the case first was a rookie officer who tried in every way that he could to prove that this was simply a tragic accident that had taken the lives of two boys and that the driver, Mackenzie Shirilla, had miraculously survived. Over time, though, that belief started to change. One of the first things that officers did was go to see Mackenzie in the hospital, where she had been taking selfies and posting pictures online of her inside of the hospital bed. Mackenzie and her parents, according to investigators, seemed completely hesitant to speak with them at all from the very beginning. By this point in time already, there was a sentiment growing online that Mackenzie may have killed Dom and Davion. The interactions in that hospital with Mackenzie and her parents did not stop those rumors. One of the officers in the hospital room actually recorded audio of his first interactions with Mackenzie and her family. It was then that he did let them know that there was an investigation into the case that was investigating the crash as vehicular homicide times two. Immediately after the officer tells them that, Mackenzie started to speak some type of broken or created language to her mother that officers said was similar to Pig Latin. It's believed that Mackenzie was asking her mom if she and they can tell police that she had a seizure or something like that. Shockingly, one of the first things that Mackenzie even said to the officer was to ask him if they could just take her driver's license away for 10 years or something similar. Investigators were astonished by that, but that was one of the first things that made them realize that Mackenzie was seemingly showing some type of guilt about the accident because she seemed to realize that she should and would pay some sort of price. Before I get too far into Mackenzie and her world that she was living in, I do want to talk about Davion Flanagan, who was the second victim in this car crash. In the trial, it was later brought up that Davion was treated almost like a piece of luggage in the car. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it seemed to them that Mackenzie didn't give much care to the fact that he was even there. He became collateral damage, so to speak. I don't want to treat Davion that way here. Davion's story is truly heartbreaking. He had overcome so much to get to the point that he was at in life, and it was taken away from him in the blink of an eye. Davion was the oldest brother to two sisters, and the three of them had been put up for adoption because their parents were unable to care for them. The adoptive parents to he and his sisters were Scott and Jamie Flanagan. Davion had overcome every obstacle in his life, and he was a very popular student at Strongsville High, where he had just graduated, and he was a successful football player there as well. He was the starting running back. Davion had aspirations to go to barber school, as he had a passion for cutting hair, and he wanted to make that his career for the rest of his life, proving that people could overcome and do whatever they set their minds to. Davion is remembered as a kind-hearted young man with an incredibly infectious smile. It's been said that Davion made friends easily, and he was incredibly faithful to the friends and family in his life. He was a Christian, and everyone around him said that he shone that light proudly in everything that he did within his life. Davion's sister, Davine Isabella Flanagan, and Dahlia Rose Flanagan, as well as Scott and Jamie, will forever miss their brother and son, who truly meant the world to them. As officers started to investigate more, they started to unravel the type of person that Mackenzie really seemed to be. As they perused her social media profiles, they quickly discovered that she was clearly someone who was known to frequently smoke marijuana and drive, and she had even posted to social media a post that said, quote, "I'm not even cool. I'm just one of those girls who can do a lot of drugs and not die," unquote. On her person, in her clothing at the accident, she was found to have psilocybin mushrooms, or magic mushrooms. Toxicology results, though, would show that her levels of marijuana and mushrooms were likely not a factor at all in the crash. Immediately, likely because of what she had said in the hospital room about telling officers that she had a seizure, her medical records were accessed, and it showed that they had never reported any incidents of blacking out or having any medical issues whatsoever. It was then deducted that there was no history to point at a medical reason for this accident, neither. Having disqualified drugs and alcohol, and also disqualifying any previously noted medical issues, investigators then centered their attention onto the Toyota Camry that McKenzie had been driving. They wanted to see if there had been any recalls on the vehicle, or if there had been anything that could be deducted to have happened, such as a mechanical failure, that could have caused this car accident. A forensic mechanic would go to the vehicle and conduct an extensive investigation. He looked the car over, and ultimately he determined that the vehicle did not have any type of failure that would have caused the acceleration or the accident. Furthermore, evidence would in fact show that the gas pedal had been pressed down to the floor leading up to the accident, and the brake had not even been touched in the lead up to the accident itself. The first lead in the case came from a friend of Davion. Davion and a group of his friends had shared information on an app, and one of the things that the app did was track each member of their friend group to show where they were and what they were doing. One of the things that the app could do was track travel paths and speeds that the friends were following. The app showed that the Camry had hit speeds of 90 miles per hour and that there was seemingly no attempt whatsoever to hit the brakes on the vehicle, as there was no fluctuation on the app to show the speed dropping. This was the first grasp, for real, of how fast the car was actually going. Around this time, as the families of Dominic and Davion were preparing for funerals and vigils were being held for the fallen pair, was when the families started to be reached out to by investigators. This was the first time that the families started to be told that the crash was, in fact, being investigated as a homicide, rather than just an accident. As a part of the investigation, police obtained Dominic's cell phone, on which he recorded quite a few interactions between he and McKenzie, namely one particular video in which McKenzie was losing her mind on Dominic because he had locked her out of his parents' home, where she had been living. From what I can deduct from the video, earlier on in the day, McKenzie had broken up with Dominic, and so he had locked the doors to keep her out of the home. McKenzie was beside herself, screaming and calling Dominic all kinds of names. McKenzie screamed at Dominic in the recording, saying that he had lied to her when he had told her that he would never lock her out of the house again. She kept telling Dominic that she was giving him one more chance to let her into the home. In the video and the past, on multiple occasions, McKenzie had threatened to key Dominic's car, break into Dominic's home, destroy Dominic's things, and so much more. Even though, based on the video, McKenzie had broken up with Dominic earlier in the day, she believed that she was entitled into the home and that she could threaten anything to get what she wanted. In the video, McKenzie does come across as incredibly crazed, while Dominic was being calm and seemingly collected, even under the circumstances. I am, of course, willing to be the devil's advocate here because I think that in any situation, a person will obviously act more calm when they know that they are recording. But the recording certainly shows McKenzie's state of mind. There were also text messages from Dominic to McKenzie saying that McKenzie threatened him and his life all the time. There's little denying that McKenzie was at least capable of coming across like a lunatic at times. Video and text can obviously prove a lot. Investigators also found out that 2 weeks prior to the crash, on July 17th of 2022, McKenzie had been driving with Dominic on Interstate 71, and the two had gotten into an argument. The argument had been bad enough that Dominic had reached out to his mom and a friend to see if they could meet up and pick him up. While on the phone with Dominic, his friend would testify that he had heard Mackenzie say to Dominic that she would crash the car right then and there. When the friend ultimately arrived to pick Dominic up, the car was pulled over on the side of the road, and when the passenger door opened for Dominic to get out, the friend said that he saw Mackenzie striking Dominic with both hands repeatedly. At this point in the case, things started to get carried away. Everyone knew that the crash was being investigated as a homicide, and social media, as we know it tends to do, kicked up a hell of a storm. In amongst all of that, though, a modeling agency reportedly reached out to Mackenzie, whose social media pages had gone viral, and said that they liked her work. Her account and the social media accounts of her mother would respond, thanking them for their interest, and Mackenzie's mom even was reacting to the rumors and the vitriol online towards her daughter by telling people that she was innocent and that she would never have killed anyone on purpose. This was far from the first time that Natalie showed full-fledged support to her daughter online and her social media posts and her shenanigans. There were numerous times that Natalie and John had liked and supported posts that Mackenzie had made as a 17-year-old girl, mind you, of her doing drugs, of her drinking, of her dressing very scantily, and clearly driving whilst under the influence of drugs. Many people said that over the years, part of the reason that Mackenzie became such a wild child was because she believed that she was above repercussions, because she certainly didn't come up against any repercussions from her parents. A few weeks after the crash, the Shirilla family started to reach out to the families of Dominic and Davion. They even sent flowers to Davion's family, and Mackenzie texted Davion's mom and sent a gif of flowers and said, quote, "I would never do this. This was just a terrible accident," unquote. Mackenzie also texted Dominic's mom and said, quote, "I did not do this on purpose. If I knew any of this would have happened, I would have made it sure it was me that died," unquote. Now, stop for a second and do let that sink in. This girl, whether it was an accident or not, was texting her boyfriend's mom after he was killed, and she felt that it was showing compassion to state that she would have made sure that she died if this was on purpose. I mean, on what planet to anyone does this seem like something that you should text to anyone? Much less someone that had frankly been a surrogate mother to Mackenzie for years, allowing her to live in her home. Dominic's mom would then ask Mackenzie what the last thing that she remembered was. Mackenzie would say, quote, "I remember turning on the street, and then my vision fades to black. It really kills me not being able to remember anything I promise I would tell you." As much as I try to play devil's advocate in some of these cases, I find it rather interesting that the last thing that she said that she remembered was something that was seen on a security camera. It was clear at that point that she was in control and that she was driving and aware of her surroundings. Then suddenly, within a moment, she apparently blacked out and hit the gas as hard as she could. There seems to be, regardless of what happened, a lack of remorse or pain in the messages that she sent to Dominic's mom. I will say that isn't shocking, though. Mackenzie seemingly wasn't showing remorse or pain in much of her life, posting again on social media not too terribly long after the crash. She went out for Halloween at an Ohio University Halloween party, and she was dressed like a skimpy zombie. She wasn't showing any real signs of being injured. Instead, she was flaunting her body, and she was flaunting the person that she had always been in hopes of becoming famous. She also went out to a concert with friends. Later in court, her mom would say that her and her father had pushed Mackenzie to go out and live a little because they said that she was inconsolable. The girl in those social media posts, though, I will say certainly did not look inconsolable. Investigators believed that Mackenzie had intended to crash the car. They also believed that she must have intended to take her own life as well. It was believed that no reasonable person could believe that crashing their vehicle into a brick wall at 90 to 100 miles per hour would result in anyone surviving the crash. To investigators, that part didn't matter, obviously, because a desire to commit suicide certainly does not excuse murder. As a part of the investigation, the Camry's event data recorder was analyzed. This is essentially the black box for the car. The EDR shows the final 5 seconds before the crash, and it showed that the gas pedal had been depressed the entire time leading up to the crash, and that the brake pedal hadn't been depressed even the slightest bit. Investigators believed that it would have taken the Camry roughly 20 to 25 seconds to hit full speed, and that because of that, there would have been plenty of time for Mackenzie to change her mind about the fact that she was speeding so fast. They believed that her decision was made. 3 months after the crash, Mackenzie was arrested in a parking lot, and she was told that she was being arrested for 2 counts of aggravated murder. I should mention here that Mackenzie was 2 days out from her 18th birthday when the crash occurred, which does, of course, open another can of worms and another thought about whether the timing was a coincidence or also something that was planned out. Because Mackenzie was only 17, she was charged initially as a juvenile. That meant that she would only be held in custody if found guilty until she was 21 years old under juvenile laws. As you can imagine, there was a hard push by investigators for the trial and charges to be changed so that Mackenzie would be charged as an adult, and they were ultimately successful. Mackenzie's family would then hire a well-known defense attorney, James McDonnell, and a plea offer was extended by the defense that prosecutors said would have essentially amounted to juvenile probation for Mackenzie. That means that they were trying to make a deal where Mackenzie would be supervised and monitored in the community rather than being taken from her home and placed in any type of facility. Neither Dominic nor Davion's family had any interest in making that plea deal, as they rightly believed that they would be little more than a slap on the wrist of Mackenzie for what was looking more and more like the murder of their sons. When the case was placed before court, Mackenzie and her defense team decided to ask for a bench trial rather than a trial in front of a jury. A bench trial is a trial that is done only in front of a judge. It was believed that the defense thought that they may have a better chance of convincing a judge of Mackenzie's innocence because the judge would base her decision solely on the law, whereas a jury might be swayed by emotions or certain testimony. The case would take place over 4 days, and the families of Dominic and Davion were present every single day. At the start of the trial, the prosecution started by showing the security footage of the acceleration and the path and ultimately the crash that had claimed the lives of Dominic and Davion. They said that there was no other explanation for anyone that watched that footage other than to know that the crash was deliberate and that it was planned out. When the footage played, Mackenzie immediately started to cry in court. The defense said that the prosecution needed to prove that Mackenzie had purposefully done something. He said that she must have wanted to kill herself too, if that was the case, agreeing that there was no way that she could have believed that she would survive a crash of that magnitude. He said that the defense believed that they could prove that Mackenzie was not, nor had she ever been suicidal. He said that the most that the video could prove definitively was that Mackenzie was driving recklessly, which does not prove murder. On the third day of trial, Natalie Shirilla, Mackenzie's mom, took the stand, and she stated that Mackenzie suffered from POTS. POTS is postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and one of the symptoms of POTS is that the person can suffer from low blood pressure, which can cause a person to feel lightheaded or even pass out. She said that she had observed Mackenzie pass out from her POTS on at least two occasions. On cross-examination, though, the prosecution astutely asked Natalie where the proof of that diagnosis was. There was nothing in Mackenzie's medical records that showed that she had ever suffered from, complained about, or been diagnosed with POTS, and neither Mackenzie nor her mom, who had signed off at the DMV, had mentioned that medical condition when getting her driver's license. Natalie's response was to say that they did not need to disclose that information at the DMV, and that Mackenzie had never had issues while driving previously. The prosecution said that they had a hard time believing that something so catastrophic could have happened in less than a minute to cause Mackenzie from being fully in control of the vehicle and observing traffic laws and following the curvature of the road to being completely out of control of herself and the vehicle and hammering down on the gas pedal. The defense closed their case by saying that the video was horrific and that none of us will ever truly know what happened inside of that car. He said that we will never know if someone else grabbed the wheel of the car, and we will never know what happened in those final moments of Dominic and Davion's lives. He said that anything was as possible as murder and planned murder. He said that Mackenzie was driving recklessly and that she was in possession of drugs, but that was the extent of what the evidence showed that she was guilty of. The prosecution closed by saying that this was the tragic end to a toxic relationship, and that is why this crash happened. They said that Davion was innocent in the back of the car and completely disregarded by Mackenzie, and that he was stuck inside of a vehicle with two people who were seemingly always fighting. In the end, the judge would find Mackenzie, who was now 19 years old, guilty of 12 counts, including two counts of murder and aggravated vehicular homicide. Mackenzie faced a maximum sentence of life in prison with eligibility of parole in 32 years. Judge Nancy Margaret Russo said that the trial was the culmination of decisions that were made by one person, and that those decisions had changed the lives of three families forever. The judge said that the video showed purpose and intent, and that Mackenzie alone had chosen this. She said that Mackenzie had a mission, and that mission was death. As the judge gave her statement at the end of the trial, Mackenzie and her mom appeared to be in shock. I cannot help but wonder if that shock came from the fact that Mackenzie was finally going to face repercussions for her actions, something that she seemingly had not ever faced from her parents or from anyone else. For the first time in her life, it seems like Mackenzie was going to pay for what she had done. Alternatively, I can't help but wonder if that shock was simply over the fact that Mackenzie was being found guilty of murder without seemingly any concrete evidence to find her guilty of doing so. The judge showed leniency in deciding that Mackenzie's two life sentences for murder would be served concurrently rather than consecutively, and that of course means that Mackenzie will be eligible for parole after 15 years in prison. She also had her driver's license revoked for life. At the end of the trial, any parties who wished to speak were able to, as a part of impact statements. I want to share the clips from a few of those family members. First up is Davion's mom, Jamie, about talking about her son, Davion Flanagan.
Good morning. Could you start with your name and speak up and speak slowly?
Yes. Your Honor, my name is Jamie Flanagan. I am the mother of the victim, Davion Flanagan. I want to share a small part of what we lost on 7/31/2022. My son, Davion, is and always will be so much more than cargo. He was precious. He was an amazing soul with a heart of gold. He gave to the world what he wanted most in his own life, love. The kind of love that would rescue a friend in the middle of the night, no questions asked, the kind that would protect others and honor them. He made friends easily with his infectious smile. He was a gifted athlete. He had plans to go to barber school and open his own shop. My son did not have a clique of friends, but instead was a friend to all. He would go out of his way to show love and kindness to others, including those that were often cast aside by society, the less fortunate, the developmentally challenged, the hurting, and the unvalued. Davion made sure that everyone that crossed his path knew that he truly saw them, that he valued them, and that they were worth his time. Davion and my kids have had more than their fair share of heartbreak, of hardship, and of loss. Davion was adopted with his sisters from foster care. They are biological siblings. We are honored to be chosen, or to have been chosen, to be their parents. Their forever family. I am devastated by the loss of Davion. The world lost a truly special man. My girls lost their best friend, their protector, the one and only trusted family that has been by their side from day one. He alone understands the pain and loss that they have gone through and was always there for them. This fact alone breaks my heart for my girls, for my family. So many dreams shattered, a future stolen. We will never get to see the amazing man that he was surely to become. His life was precious. Like I said, he was so much more than cargo. I pray daily for strength and perseverance for myself and for my family. I also pray that Mackenzie will find true remorse in her heart and true repentance. We thank all of those that worked so hard to help us bring justice for our son. We are forever thankful. Davion, we miss you terribly, but as Christians, we grieve with hope. We will make sure your memory lives on, and we ache for the day that we are united again in eternity. Thank you.
The next clip that I want to share is from Christine Russo, Dominic's mom, as she talked about going through all of this.
Lorraine, can you start with your name?
I'm Christine Russo. I'm Dominic's mother. No one wanted this to be a murder or to punish Mackenzie Shirilla for this accident. But this was not a car accident. The evidence and science proved that Mackenzie Shirilla murdered my son, Dominic, as well as Davion. There's no fix put in this case, as the Shirillas would like to proclaim. I want to thank Strongsville Police Department and the state of Ohio for seeking the truth behind this crash. Thanks to them, we all know what happened in that car that day. What we don't know is why. I wish I could change this every day. I lost 3 children in that crash. Not a minute goes by each day that I don't think about my son, as well as Davion. My heart is forever broken. The cries heard from the Shirilla family and friends after the verdict are nothing more than a lack of remorse. Mackenzie Shirilla had a choice. Dom and Davion did not. We are all left here to mourn. But what Tom, Inik, and Davion lost can never be remedied in any way or by any particular sentence. July 31st, 2022. I called Mackenzie's mother, hysterical with the loss of my son and Davion. I knew Mackenzie was in the hospital, and the first statement said to me was, "Oh, please don't listen to what everyone's saying on Facebook." Yeah. My son is dead, his friend is dead, and I'm checking on yours. Yet social media is what's important. Social media has made a game out of the life of Mackenzie and is making a game out of this heart-wrenching tragedy. No one can imagine the pain of losing a child unless they have lost one themselves. The pain is forevermore. Time does not heal this wound. Mackenzie, going to prison because you did this. Be thankful that you're still alive and have a future, whatever that may be. Dom and Davion were robbed of their futures, their hopes, and their dreams. Mackenzie showed no mercy on Dominic, nor did she on Davion. Only God at this time can have mercy on her soul. Thank you.
The next clip that I want to share is of Mackenzie's mom, Natalie Shirilla, which is certainly much different. I will let you listen before I share my opinions on this one.
Can you start with your name?
My name is Natalie Shirilla. I just want to say, am I allowed to address them at all?
Sure.
I just want to say to the families that I'm broken, sad and lost, and my heart hurts for everyone, okay? Davion was her new friend, and Dom was the love of her life, and he was part of our family, okay? I'm just so sorry that this happened, and we're heartbroken, okay? And then, Your Honor, this was a terrible, tragic, nightmare accident to have happened that she has no memory of, and she will never emotionally or physically recover from it. She almost died, too. And we're asking that you please not run the sentences consecutive. He was family, and we all loved each other. That morning of the accident, I got a phone call that there was a car accident, okay? So we went to the hospital, and I didn't even know who was in the car. The names had not been confirmed yet. And I'm going to cry because I missed Dom so much. We loved him so much. So I called Dom, like, over and over again, praying that he was going to answer the phone, and he didn't answer the phone. So then I tried to call his mom, and she didn't answer the phone either. And I still didn't know who was in the car. I didn't even know if she was alive. I didn't know what was happening. So then we were in the waiting room. And then his mom did call me. So I answered the phone, and I was like, oh my God, like, I don't even know who was in the car. Like, what's happening? Was that Dom? And she said, what do you mean? My son is dead. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And then she said something like, and now I have to wait until your kid's out of the hospital. And then I didn't hear the rest. We loved him so much, and I hung up the phone. I did not talk about social media. I didn't even know what was going on yet, okay? So then, that was it. So in the hospital, that Vitality post, I commented on that because somebody had called her a murderer, okay? And she's not a murderer, so she didn't even have her phone at that point because the police had still had it, okay? So I jumped on. And I was like, you know, she's not a murderer. She's more sad than hurt than most of these people commenting. She's been trying to get in touch with you. I mean, at that point, it was just an accident. So I commented on her behalf, not because of the modeling opportunity. Who cares about that? I don't want them to refer to her as a murderer, okay? And I don't even know how that commented got on the phone because the police still had her device and she could not access her phone or social media. That's why I did it. And I had called them asking if they could shut down social media because people were calling her a murderer and making death threats and organizing groups to, you know, take her out when she got out of the hospital and stuff. So I didn't even want her phone. I don't care about her phone. I don't care about social media. I just wanted them to stop calling her a murderer so that when she did come to and she did come out of surgery, multiple surgeries, that she wouldn't see all these people calling her a murderer because she would never, ever, ever murder the love of her life, okay? The Halloween, for 3 months after the accident, she would only wear his clothes. She would only eat the snacks he ate. She would only listen to the music he wrote, okay? She was laying in bed for three months crying. There was a shrine of him next to her with photos and things that he liked, and this flower that lights up that he got her because he wanted it to be fresh and alive forever. It's like a little Beauty and the Beast flower. Okay, she's got this shrine of him next to her. So she was crying for 3 months. So her friends asked if she wanted to go out trick-or-treating or Halloween, and it was at OU. And she didn't even want to go. She said, I don't know, should I go? She couldn't even walk yet, barely. So I told her, I said, baby, please go. It's Halloween. You've been laying for 3 months crying, only listening to his music. Please go have just a moment of fun. A moment of fun. So we told her to go. My husband drove her. I brought her back home. She just needed a second of fun from losing her whole world. Her whole world. So that was us. We told her to go. And that concert she went to with Dom's cousin, Abby, they picked her up. They brought her there. That was Dom, Mackenzie and Dom and Abby all decided to go to this concert together while they were in the hospital. That was for Dom. Everything she did after the accident was either in honor of him, to be close to him, or just to be by him any way that she can. She's like devastated and tragic. He was the air that she breathes, okay? And they went with his cousin. We spent all kinds of time with him after the accident. What was the other thing?
I'm hearing an awful lot about your daughter. I'm not hearing very much about the two dead people.
Dominic, okay, I'm asking you for a leniency because this was a tragic accident that she does not remember. And Davion, he's a new friend. And I'm so sorry.
What does that mean? His life is worthless?
No. Okay. God, no, not at all. They all loved each other. They all spent every day together. You know what I mean? I don't know too much for him.
Isn't that part of the problem with Mrs. Schumann?
Sorry?
Isn't that part of the problem that they all trusted each other? Isn't that part of...
It's not a problem at all. It was wonderful.
It's a problem how they all ended up in the car together and two of them ended up dead.
I understand. I understand what it looks like. I'm saying that it was a tragic accident. She would never...
Well, we're going to have to disagree on that.
I understand.
Right. And I respect your position. You disagree with me.
I understand. But anyway, that's it. I just wanted to address those. We told her to go to those things, and then she did go with Dom's family. So look at that. Don't look at it with the... Look on that with different eyes if you can, please.
Those things are not relevant.
Not at all. But she's a good... If you would have a moment, all you would need is 5 minutes of a conversation to have with her to learn who she is. Just that you would just need 5 minutes to learn who she is and what she's capable of not doing and doing, and you would see for yourself.
Thank you. That's all.
I'm so sorry, guys.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I love you.
I cannot get over the fact that Natalie kept on saying that this was an accident after a trial where it was found to not be an accident. Not because I definitely and definitively don't disagree with her, but this woman literally seems to see nothing beyond her daughter. I've seen parents like this in my life, and honestly, it scares me and makes me sick at the same time. One way or another, her daughter was behind the wheel of a vehicle that killed two young men, and it seems to me that all she wanted to do was disprove things that were in court, which frankly is not what these statements are supposed to be about. As the judge astutely pointed out, Natalie gets up in front of the court and says so much about her daughter and about social media, and she says very little to anything about Dominic or Davion until prompted by the judge. She came across as very disingenuous. For her to say that you would just need to spend a few minutes with Mackenzie to realize that she wasn't capable of this is frankly insanity to me. People spoke to her character. People said that they were not shocked that she could have done this, and they shared countless stories about Mackenzie bullying people. It seems to me that her character and her relationship and maybe everything about who she was viewed through rose-colored glasses by her mom, who, even after she was found guilty of murder, needed to defend her daughter rather than speak to the tragedy that had occurred. Even when she does talk about Dominic and Davion, she just asks for leniency because her daughter apparently doesn't remember the accident. This woman, Natalie, I hope that she one day sees that she is a massive part of the problem of who Mackenzie was, but also a massive part of the discontent towards Mackenzie, and maybe even a massive reason why so many people disbelieve that she could even remotely be innocent. The final clip that I do want to share with you today is from Mackenzie herself.
Mackenzie, you don't have to speak if you don't want to. It's up to you.
I don't
want
to.
Okay. You can sit if it's more comfortable, whatever's okay. Better for you.
The families of Dom and Davion, I'm so deeply sorry. I hope one day you can see I would never let this happen or do it on purpose. I wish I could remember what happened. I'm just so sorry. I'm heartbroken. I love Dom and Davion. We were all friends, and Dom was my soulmate. I wish I could take all your pain away, and I'm so sorry. And to my family, thank you for the support and all the love you guys give. Thank you for fighting for me. I love you all so much. All right, I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to say here that when watching Mackenzie speak and watching her through the trial, I personally felt one of two ways. This is either a young woman who honestly doesn't remember what happened when the car crashed, and she experienced some kind of mental or physical duress that caused this crash, or she is a young woman who should never be allowed out of prison because she certainly is a good actor. I honestly hope that one day we do find out which one of those is true, because obviously that is a massive difference. This is either a young woman who is in prison and perhaps should not be, or she is a young woman who has a lot more issues than she lets on, and she needs a lot of help. In defense of where one side of that stands, I do need to say that I've personally been in a car accident that I still do not remember to this very day. I can remember just before the accident, and I can remember after the accident, but I don't recall the accident happening whatsoever. So, perhaps that's why I am not completely convinced that she is lying. Our brains do have an absolutely uncanny way of forgetting trauma at times, so that we don't have to keep remembering and reliving things. We also had a car accident at work once, where one of our residents had a medical emergency on her way down a ramp into the parking garage. And as a part of that, her foot stomped down on the gas pedal, and she sped, even getting air, before she crashed into a stanchion and sadly passed away on impact. So again, I do have to leave room here for a shadow of doubt. As someone who has worked with a number of youth and young women in my lifetime and young men in my lifetime, especially in today's day and age, I can say that Mackenzie's actions, her social media feed, and the fights that she had with Dominic before the accident do not mean that she committed this crime, and do not even come across as completely abnormal to me. However, I can't defend the partying and the posts that happened after the accident, and of course I can see that there is a stack of evidence that makes it unlikely that Mackenzie didn't make a decision to crash that car. However, I have to present both sides to feel good about this particular case. I guess that's where I want to close this episode this week. I want to talk about the world that we live in. This is something that I've taught to young adults and to youth when I've worked with them. We need to be aware of how we live every day of our lives, because almost everywhere you go, there is a phone or a camera or someone watching. More than ever, you are always being documented, and with that, you are also or can be judged in the future based on actions. A lot of the basis for this guilty verdict was because Mackenzie was a young woman who certainly had a lot of attitude and certainly was not nice to people at times. I think that that's a big part of why she is in prison. when you threaten to crash a car, evidently, 2 weeks before you crash a car, obviously that doesn't look good. We need to watch our words and our actions every day because we never know when they may come back to haunt us. Proverbs chapter 21 verses 23 to 24 says this: "Those who guard their mouths and their tongues keep themselves from calamity. The proud and arrogant person, mocker is his name, behaves with insolent fury." We need to remember this. Our words and our actions, even when not judged in the moment, can come back to haunt us. We need to always think before we speak and think before we act. And I truly hope from the bottom of my heart that the truth isn't that Mackenzie got caught as a victim of this. Because if the guilty verdict isn't the truth, this is truly a young woman who lost her soulmate, a friend, and whose life will never be the same because she was judged guilty for actions that certainly look like they were her own thoughts and actions. Never before have I covered a case, though, where I found myself truly wanting to speak to the guilty party. I do feel like there is more to this story. As I alluded to earlier, I do believe that Natalie, her mom, is a big part of the problem here. She seems obsessed with trying to prove that Mackenzie didn't do this, which I understand, but the way that she goes about it, the way she spoke after this trial was over, all of it just comes across as crazy to me. Like, that is not how you speak in a courtroom in front of families of two people who passed away in a vehicle that your daughter was driving. Alternatively, though, I understand why she feels that way. There doesn't seem to be any evidence here aside from the fact that they pieced together circumstantial evidence that proves that Mackenzie was A, capable of murder, or B, murdered. People say and do things all the time, and it's also very easy to be calm, for example, in a recording that you know is happening, and also very easy to be angry and yelling and screaming like Mackenzie was when you're locked out of the place you live and when you don't know that things are being recorded. It's not a fair representation of anyone. Also, there was nothing here but one person's word that Mackenzie had said that she would crash the car 2 weeks prior. The fact that all of this strung along as circumstantial evidence wound up with two murder sentences here really boggles my mind. Regardless of all of that, I understand that lots of people feel strongly about this case one way or another, as do I. However, what is not lost on me and should not be lost on anyone is the fact that ultimately what happened here is two young men lost their lives on July 31st of 2022. Dominic Russo and Davion Flanagan, from all accounts, were two absolutely wonderful young men who had their entire futures, their entire lives ahead of them, and undoubtedly they both would have touched countless lives, and they will be lost by everyone that knew them, and missed out on by everyone who would have had the opportunity to know them. So, lost in whatever you feel about this case, do not lose sight of the fact that neither one of those young men deserved to have their lives come to a tragic end. I will leave it here for now, though, and I will wish all of you listeners the best, and thank you all from the bottom of my heart for taking the time to listen to another episode of Gone But Never Forgotten. I value each and every one of you listeners more than you could ever know. If you enjoy the podcast, if you agree with my take on Mackenzie Shirilla or disagree that she could quite possibly be wrongfully in prison, reach out on social media. Let me know what you think. Let's have a discussion. I'm certainly open to having a discussion about this case and any other case that I've covered. In the meantime, I hope that you watch your words, mind your actions, and do your best to always be better. Take care, and I will see you again back here next week for another episode of Gone But Never Forgotten.